I know you all just had lunch, right? But we got to ask you a favor. We brought a whole bunch of snacks here that are kind of integral to the discussion this afternoon. So what we'd like you to volunteer to do is help us with these snacks. Back on the back table, there are a wide variety of snacks, hopefully some things that you've never seen before, maybe intentionally. But this afternoon, we're going to talk a little bit about how universal design really hits us all where we live. And I don't know any better way to start that discussion than with food. This seminar works especially well with students because there's food involved. But I'm hoping you'll sort of jump into the spirit of this and go ahead and get up and go back and pick yourself up a snack. But before you do, let me just say a couple of things. Yes, the cautionary note, please read, the labels are in not all in English, intentionally. There are also, and I'm looking at this crowd, and I know you can handle this. We've had some incidents before, but I think it's going to be okay today. Back among all those snacks that are not all that well labeled, there are a couple of packages of pet food. Now, that is... We're thinking in terms of how well universal design communicates with us. A lot of that has to do with packaging. I mean, you folks buy things. You know what a nightmare it is when you're looking for something at the store and there's 50 different options for it. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Coke was Coke. No longer. So we don't actually have any Coke back there because I realize that would just confuse everybody. So what we've got back there is a lot of snacks that pose challenges to understanding what's in the package, challenges to understanding how to open the package, challenges to figure out if that's even what you want. And what we'd like you to do is select one, and then as you enjoy it, hopefully, think about would it affect your enjoyment of that snack if you had to select it without looking, which we've done before, and again there were incidents, or if you had to enjoy that snack using just one hand or no hands at all, how would that affect your ability to make a selection among these packages and to enjoy what's inside? So we're going to take just a couple of minutes to let you mill around back there and grab one. And again, if you can, choose carefully.
Read carefully.
Yes.
Thank you.
do this now. Okay, you all seem to, nobody's keeled over yet, so you haven't started maybe trying these. I did notice that the two pet food packages are out circulating somewhere. I hope you know who you are and what you're doing. You look pretty happy about that. Which one did you get? What is that?
Papaya.
Well, I'm not saying you can't eat it. I'm just... Sure, I wouldn't have brought it if it wasn't safe, right? There's a disclaimer form in the back that you just need to sign. Just a little release. There you, okay, so you had to read that, though, didn't you? All right. Okay, feel free to open those. And I noticed, did anybody take the rock star? Who's got the rock star? Good for you.
No alcohol.
Oh, is that why you thought it was? See, that's not intended for human consumption either. Well, okay, you all showed a lot of bravery in trying some new things. I imagine there are some things there that you haven't seen before, and hopefully you'll find something good inside. But as I said, while we talk, think about packaging and whether and if it's ever a good example of universal design. We'll see how you do in just a few minutes. Got another little exercise for you, too. This one's a little less challenging, but you did so well with the first one. I don't think we'll have trouble here. What we're doing in this seminar, as well as talking about examples of universal design, is we're going to give some away. Now, that's the good news. The somewhat less impressive news is that I remembered to bring all those snacks from my office, which is only 25 miles away, by the way. But I forgot to bring the gifts today. So here's how we're going to do this. Molly, who's actually running this seminar, by the way. I'm Jim Mueller. I'm just sort of the second guy. But Molly was intelligent enough to bring some of her examples that we're going to give away. And I will bring mine tomorrow. They will be in booth 55, the Wireless Rehabilitation Engineering Center's booth, which, when you think about it, is a shameless way to get you to come down to that booth. If I'd thought of it, I probably would have done it. But what we will do is we will draw business cards at the end of our seminar here. And as we draw the business card, the first person chosen gets the biggest choice, and on down the line. Now, I will bring gifts tomorrow, and you can pick them up. Make your choice at the Wireless RERC booth tomorrow. Now, you don't have to play this game, but if you want to play this game, I have a bag here for business cards. So, I'm going to go calmly down the aisle here and gather up business cards.
I'm going to get started so we can get on to the fun part. I'm Molly Story. I'm the outgoing chair of SIG 19. We will have a new chair tomorrow, one way or the other. Jim and I were two of the authors of the Principles of Universal Design. I was at the Center for Universal Design for about 10 years. I've been working on medical equipment the last 6 years, but it's definitely a universal design challenge. As Jim said, let me explain a little bit. He's collecting business cards. He's going to draw them, and the first person drawn gets to pick whatever they want from what we've shown you or Jim's described to you, and the next person gets to pick from what's left, if that's not clear. Anyway, I thought I would, for those of you who are new to the concept, I thought it might be helpful to give a brief presentation of what the principles of universal design are that we came up with. And then we'll get into the good stuff, which is I brought a few things, Jim has a few things. I'm hoping people in the audience will at least be able to describe some stuff that they love, either that are new this year or that they've been using for 10 years and they love, or all their life, or whatever it is. I'm hoping to have a lot of interaction with all of you, and we will, of course, talk about the packaging. I was lucky enough to work closely with Ron Mace for the last 4.5 years of his life. He was the director at the Center for Universal Design when I got there, and he is widely credited with having coined the term universal design. I know there were a few people working in the same area in the 80s. But his quote is that universal design is the design of all products and environments to be usable by people of all ages and abilities to the greatest extent possible. The earliest example of that in print we found is 1991, but he was talking about it well before that. I should go back. Ron was a polio survivor who attended North Carolina State and got his degree in architecture from NC State because his mother was willing to carry him up the stairs to class. So he was instrumental in creating one of the first building codes in the country for the state of North Carolina, which later evolved into and was one of the predecessors for the Americans with Disabilities Act. And Ron was a remarkable guy. I like to draw the distinction between accessible design and universal design this way. Accessible design is specifically for people with disabilities. Universal design is for everyone, including people with disabilities. It's a different way of thinking about what you're doing. To me, the critical difference between the two is the fact that you've integrated those accessible components into the overall. They look like they belong there. You planned them from the beginning. You didn't glue them on after the fact. So design integration is really key to universal design. These are the 10 authors of the Principles of Universal Design. We were all over the country then. We are even more so now. Ron Mace, of course. Mike Jones, who's at the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, was then the co-director of the Center for Universal Design. Myself, I have a little company called Human Spectrum Design in California. Jim Mueller. Greg Vanderheiden from the Trace R&D Center, John Sanford, who's at the VA Medical Center in Atlanta, also Georgia Institute of Technology. He has two new hats to wear, I just learned. Betty Rose Cannell at the VA Medical Center in Atlanta, Ed Steinfeld at the IDEA Center in Buffalo, Abir Mullick, who was then at IDEA, who's now chair of industrial design at Georgia Tech, and Elaine Ostroff, founder of Adaptive Environment Center in Boston. She's also the mother of universal design education. These are the 7 principles. The way we came up with them was we spent 2 days in a room together putting together everything we could think of that described universal design, every possible guideline, rule, axiom, anything anybody had ever come up with for universal design. We put it all on the walls, and then we grappled with it for the next year and a half to come up with something we called the Principles of Universal Design. The first is equitable use. We talked about whether or not this was even a principle or whether it was part of the definition, but we finally came around to the idea that it was absolutely a principle and it had to be number 1. Number 2, flexibility in use. 3 is simple and intuitive use. 4, perceptible information. 5, tolerance for error. 6, low physical effort. And 7, size and space for approach and use. Associated with each of these, we had at least 4 guidelines. Number 3 has 5 guidelines. So principle 1, equitable use. The design is useful and marketable to people with diverse abilities. I paraphrase that as design for all. That's what they call it in Europe. This is what this is all about. Design for everybody at the same time as far as you can. The 4 guidelines are provide the same means of use for all users. Avoid segregating or stigmatizing users. 3rd, make privacy, security, and safety equally available to all users. And 4, make the design appealing to all users. Principle 2, flexibility in use. The design accommodates a wide range of individuals and individual preferences and abilities. I paraphrase that as design for each. It's often not enough to design for everybody at the same time. As far as you can, build in some flexibility so people can customize it. So A, provide choice in methods of use. I should go back a sec. Sorry. The image is a water park where the different levels of the water pools are at different heights. So kids of different heights, people who are seated, can all play together in a single water park. Principle 2, the first guideline is to provide choice in methods of use. The second guideline is to accommodate right or left-handed access. C, facilitate the user's accuracy and precision. And D, provide adaptability to the user's pace. The image is the speed control on an audio device so that you can speed up or slow down the playback depending on your needs. If you are a speed listener, as some people with vision impairments are, you can crank that thing up so that you can listen very quickly. If you're trying to transcribe something and you can't understand what they said, you can slow it down. Principle 3, simple and intuitive use. Use of the design is easy to understand regardless of the user's experience, knowledge, language skills, or current concentration level. In other words, design for the mind. 5 guidelines. A, eliminate unnecessary complexity. I'm sure you can think of some examples that need this one. B, be consistent with user expectations and intuition. People learn how to use things, and the next thing they come across, they're going to try to use the same way. C, accommodate a wide range of literacy and language skills. D, arrange information consistent with its importance. And E, provide effective prompting and feedback during and after task completion. The image is, again, I've been working in medical devices, I apologize, but this is an AED, an automatic electrical defibrillator, which talks you through every step of the process. The icons actually light up, it talks to you in multiple languages, and the paddles are connected to one another, so you can't get them very far wrong. Then there's there's a plus in the middle of the chest, which shows you where to do the chest compressions. As far as a device that people don't use very often, maybe never used before, it's a pretty nice design. Principle 4, perceptible information. The design communicates necessary information effectively to the user, regardless of ambient conditions or the user's sensory abilities. In other words, design for the senses. Guideline A, use different modes for redundant presentation of essential information. In other words, voice and visual and tactile. B, maximize the legibility of essential information in all sensory modes so that whatever the information is stands out from the background. C, differentiate elements in ways that can be described to make it easy to give directions because otherwise things are too similar. And D, provide compatibility with a variety of techniques or devices. The example here is the Metro, the Washington Metro fare machine, which has tactile information in both Braille and raised all capital letters, which are easier to feel with the fingertips. It has high contrast print, white on black, in upper and lower case, which is easier to read with low vision. It also has a button for audio output. Principle 5, tolerance for error. The design minimizes hazards and the adverse consequences of accidental or unintended actions. In other words, design for error. People make mistakes. A, arrange elements to minimize hazards and errors. B, provide warnings of hazards and errors. One of my favorites is a textured doorknob that leads to a place that you really shouldn't go. Provide fail-safe features so that if you make a mistake, it will fail safely. And discourage unconscious actions and tasks that require vigilance. The example is contact lens solution bottles, where one of them is okay in your eye and the other one isn't. The cleaner has a red tip, and this is definitely a situation in which your vision is compromised. So it's a pretty nice solution for that. Principle 6, low physical effort. The design can be used efficiently and comfortably with a minimum of fatigue. In other words, designed for limited strength and stamina. Guideline A, allow the user to maintain a neutral body position. B, use reasonable operating forces. C, minimize repetitive actions. And D, minimize sustained physical effort. The example is a pipette. Rather than having one device that you use over and over again, you have one that has multiple heads and you can do multiple pipettes at once. The device in the hand of the woman is also lower pressure and allows her to use a pistol grip rather than some more finger-intensive grips that are used sometimes. Principle 7 is size and space for approach and use. Appropriate size and space are provided for approach, reach, manipulation, and use, regardless of the user's body size, posture, or mobility. In other words, designed for different body sizes. Guideline A, provide a clear line of sight to important elements for any seated or standing user. B, make reach to all components comfortable for any seated or standing user. C, accommodate variations in hand or grip size. And D, provide adequate space for the use of assistive technologies or personal assistants. The example is a nurse's station in a pediatric ward where they've lowered a section of counter so that someone who's seated or someone who's short can communicate with the nurse on the other side at eye level. So those are the principles. I'm done with my pitch. You can, Jim will come up and do his comedy routine again. So if you want to talk about packaging next, maybe, and then we'll launch into the new examples. Thank you very much.
Now tell the truth. Is it because you opened it in a movie? service are the kinds of experiences we all have every day. And it really does shape our lives, doesn't it? This was before we even got inside the packages, right? So all that experience that's really just getting to the product is enough of a challenge. What happens when you actually get to the product? Do you, any of you have products that you are just thrilled you made it through the packaging or really glad that you bought it? Maybe you still have it or you kept getting replacements of it after you used it up. Are there any really favorite products in your life that you think are great examples of universal design? Now, I'm an industrial designer. I design these things, so it really hurts me. I hear all the silence. There just isn't anything out there that I will say. Right, let me toss one out. Any of you ever play Nintendo Wii? You like it?
Yeah.
Tell us, how many hours a day
have you played? About
3 hours. 3 hours in a stretch. Okay, the Nintendo Wii, which obviously is so popular, I think it's the first video game that's been sold out 2 years in a row at Christmas time, is not only really, really popular in the mainstream, let's use the rehabilitation centers. We're using it here as the Wounded Warrior programs. It's used at senior centers both here and around the country because everybody gets to play it together. Bowling happens, at least the senior center, bowling happens to be the favorite game. I don't know, what's your favorite?
Tennis.
Okay. Because these are games which most of us can identify with. We sort of know what the game is, right? Now, I can do Super Mario Kart pretty well, but the same other game my kids challenge me to do, I get wiped out right away. But Nintendo, they say intentionally, Nintendo is starting to look at a much broader market. Because sooner or later, you have a lot of competition and a lot of success, you saturate the market, right? You've got to find more customers. Otherwise, you've got to go into another line of work. Well, Nintendo didn't want to do that, so what they did is started to develop a product that could be used across generations. And across ability. It is incredibly popular, and they are making some money doing it. Can you think of any other products that might have maybe accidentally been useful across generations?
Well, I was just thinking about the earlier question on something that was the last place
together.
I haven't seen without a pocket knife or a Swiss Army.
A pocket knife or a Swiss Army? And why is that? Is it that you always have to cut stuff, or is it?
Well, everybody always asks me for it, and you know I have one.
Okay.
One, but you know, you use your fuel gun, your knife on it. It's just
really useful.
It's in my pocket, and it's not a big one. I don't have to wear it on the belt. I've got it on me right now.
When you're in the airport, and the airport security.
I can open any of these packages for you. Yeah.
There's the assistant that we all need when we open the package. I assume you checked that in your luggage, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
A bicycle.
A bicycle. How long have you been riding bicycles?
Almost a long
time.
Okay. How many bicycles have you on? Many. Because it's something that you learned when you were younger and people just continue to use those skills and continue to get the enjoyment out of it. Started out as assistive technology and became popular in the mainstream market. Think of anything? Yes.
I don't think the bigger text firms scan technology for iPhones and computers and predictive text systems.
Right, predictive text is a perfect example, yes?
Voice activation systems.
Voice activation systems. Yes, ma'am?
Captioning.
Captioning on TVs. Some of you obviously go to very loud bars. Any else? Yes.
One of the interesting things about captioning is that we've also learned it's good for people learning English.
Yeah.
Because they're the words and they get to read the words while they hear the words. It has all kinds of interesting applications.
about the internet. Texting started out exclusively in DTYs, yeah. What else? Okay, there's a lot of universal design out there. There's a lot of things that we seem to gravitate toward. Is it a bad idea to ask any about any experiences that we've had that were maybe less than great? Is that the easier question to answer? Are there any designs that you thought, what a disaster? And I thought, we've already got a volunteer. Kevin.
They just recently upgraded my cable box. I have a time to order cable, and we had a software from Panasonic, and they've gone to this new, this was after the last month. And overnight, they upgraded apparently all their boxes and this new standardized software. The things that I knew how to do with my old system, I can no longer do with the new improved and upgraded system. It's one of the most obvious.
Because you learned a previous procedure and now that procedure doesn't work anymore?
Right, and a procedure that was obvious would make it more difficult. So for example, if you wanted a DVR, if you want to find a show, there's a keyboard and both of them have keyboards, but as you got to do it with the arrow keys on the remote. The old system had a predictive text thing, so as you started getting closer to what you wanted, the letters on the keyboard dropped out. The new one, you pretty much have to type out all of what you want, and there's no dropout, and the way the keyboard is organized is a bad way. So, and that's one example. If you wanted to, one of the nice things about the DVR is if you're kind of moving back and forth in the shows, the old system, there was a way to press a button and you could hop to the beginning. Back in 15-minute chunks. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to back up, I went to front line, and there's sometimes 2-hour front lines. Stops at the end, you have to go at the fastest speed, it'll go back to the beginning. So, it really has changed the way I use that.
It's a good question here, because how many things do we find difficult to use because of the thing we used before? It's the system that we learned before. If the new thing doesn't fit that same pattern, we say, well, what idiot designed this? Because they're not in my head. And we find that just the memory of how we thought it should work inhibits our ability to use it.
The new automated voice response, where it says,
I don't recognize what you said. There's a whole comedy routine on Hades. Yes, sir. You know how to get around that?
Just start getting ready.
upset about that. While we looked at a lot of packaging things that dealt with sensory and physical limitations, there's a lot of the cognitive overlay to usability, isn't there? When you think about the kinds of issues that we have with all sorts of products, being able to understand it and understand what to do is a large portion of its usability, isn't it? Which is an interesting development when you think about it. When we first started talking about accessibility, and we had that symbol, convinced everybody who cared that if you were had a disability, you were in a wheelchair. It doesn't really help us in this.
Yeah,
and always facing the same direction. Yes, John.
Just to sort of give two contrasting examples and following up on two things that I said, contrasting examples from two competitive companies. As far as the election ballot goes, the day after the election, that election, Apple Computers put out a full-page ad in USA Today with the Florida butterfly ballot with underneath it saying, "Design makes a difference." In contrast, that Windows Vista is exactly what Kevin's talking about, and that it is completely different. And on the 2007 Office is completely different, and Microsoft did that intentionally. And they expected in pre-testing that it would take no longer than 2 weeks to learn how to use it. And they found out that they hit their design criteria and that it takes 2 weeks to learn how to use it. So any of you that have 2 weeks to spare and want to relearn a system,
what was their rationalization for making it take 2 weeks to learn?
Well, they completely revamped it. Right. And actually, if you look at it, it makes some of it makes them feel reasonable. And it's sort of like Kevin was talking about, where you know you only see they no longer use school boards, but they use ribbons, and we look like sort of things of school boards. But you only get what you need. So every time you go through a command on a ribbon, you only get what you need. Intuitively, it makes sense, but we've all used, all of us that have used Windows up to then have done something totally different. So the learning time in order to get to you know where they want you to be.
Add on to that, another thing that makes it more difficult is, you know, they made changes trying to make it easier down the road, even if the initial, you know, learning isn't well. But the other thing that affects anybody who uses Dragon, Dragon in Office 2007, in 2003 it's fantastic. In 2007, there's still all sorts of glitches. So, you know, you have to pull in the Dragon pad and the dictating.
months I can use it for this program, because that obviously you don't use everything each time you use it. So I'll learn two things today, two things tomorrow, and I'll have to keep learning that over the course of the next year. So the learning curve is really long. And unfortunately, these are the kinds of technologies that change a little bit faster than we can learn. So we are constantly playing catch up with a lot of things. Right?
For the last year, I've been testing Vista in August 2000 without the mouse. And you can imagine the learning curve is 2 weeks spread over how long. But with the mouse, there are no rules. There's no consistencies. It cannot be learned through logic or through finding a pattern and using it and applying it in a different situation, because it's just not there. So I stopped using it.
Example of pumping gas in the car, it depends which car you're driving. Sometimes you pull in the gas station, gas. I have a German car, you've got to go on the right side to pump the gas. It's a sort of universal design.
And that is more than time, because now gas costs enough that you have to drive around the gas. Who are you?
The e-grips might be us.
Oh, well, these are my giveaways, actually.
Yeah, exactly. We should talk about that.
Yes, we do. Okay. I just wanted to talk a little bit about what our strategies could be. Can we just wring our hands and say, gee, it's too bad, all this stuff is so terrible? What do you do when a product is particularly good or particularly bad, besides throw it? Yes, sir. Okay, the point was
say exactly what their experiences are. Through CNET, opinions, a lot of blogs out there. So your voice can actually be heard, and by people who care. Yes?
Sometimes I modify the product if it's not working. I got a pretty cheap MP3 player, and the power supply was terrible. It had like an hour on the battery life or something. So I got a booster battery pack for it, and that just makes it pretty expensive.
Okay, so you can do a little bit of guerrilla warfare on products and change them to fit you. That's the advantage of this community here. That's the kind of stuff we love to do. Yes.
Steal good ideas. See some other place.
Steal good. Give me an example. Stealing a good idea. Let them know how their products are being used. There are examples going back 20 years of companies that have actually acted on feedback they've got from customers. And we tend to think people don't listen, but they do. And so we've got to have a voice. And that includes saying the good stuff, too. I've usually found that when I write something about how many years I've been their customer and how many hundreds of dollars I've spent on their product, and now it stinks, I'm more likely to get a response. These are loyal customers we're talking about. They want to keep them. Businesses know that the customers that they can hang on to are a whole lot less expensive than the ones they have to go out and get. And that's especially true in say, the wireless industry. They have already quantified how much money they spent to get you to sign up for the plan you're on. And they know that if they lose you within that time, they're going to make you pay to get out of it, because they're going to have to spend money to go find somebody to replace you. So satisfied customers is really the name of the game in business success. All right, one more comment, and then we're going to talk about some drivers.
It's one of those pictures you sent me.
I did not send it.
This is Jim in a museum in Tokyo.
That's all the time we have.
Oh, sorry. Here are your products.
No. Here. You've got some products to share, too.
Yeah, I do.
I swear we were really organized right before we started. But what we were really happy to have you here today, and we're really glad the group is still breathing after all the snacks that we shared with you. But we don't want you to leave without some parting gifts. I do apologize for my not bringing mine, but those of you whose names we will draw who do not get a gift here will be able to pick theirs up down at the Wireless RERC booth number 55 tomorrow afternoon. Okay, the booths close up, I think, at 3, so be sure and get there before then. All right, so what we need to do is have an impartial drawer kind of person.
Well, we have to present the products first. They don't know what to choose from.
All right, we'll do that. Okay, product prize number one. Those of you may already have seen this before, eGrips. If you've ever fallen asleep and your remote control has fallen out of your hand, this is what you need. If your cell phone has ever rested on the dashboard of your car and fallen down while you were using your laptop computer and eating a McDonald's burger while you're driving 65, this is the product that you need. This is one that I will bring. Okay. Thank you. This is one of those newfangled Apple computers, isn't it? This is running the Vista system on it too, right? Okay. This is known as the iSlice. Sounds like a dangerous product, but this is one of those things to minimize your need for carrying a Swiss Army knife to open a package. TSA does not know about this. So you can get this through security. It will open in these kinds of packages we've been struggling with today, as well as those CD and DVD containers. Sorry. Two motions. You know, one of your principles is to not do simultaneous. No. Okay, this is the OWL credit card magnifier. Normally what we do in these seminars is we award this to the person who has the most unreadable business card. But we're going to freely distribute this one. Okay, the next one is, I'm probably going to get the name of this wrong. The Sassy Spoon and Bowl Dispenser thing. It's really got a great name. But what it is, this is a bowl so that a parent can, they don't have to hold on to the bowl. It can be strapped onto their wrist or clamped onto their wrist and feed their child using this spoon that's actually heat sensitive that tells you if the food's too hot. Kind of neat idea.
That's all we've got.
They're surprises. No, okay. These are the ones that I will have at the booth tomorrow. Okay. But Molly has brought gifts in person.
The suitcase from Smoky, California. All right. I just went to my local Bed Bath & Beyond looking for specifically for a couple things and picked up a couple other things while I was there. This is a citrus peeler that you can slip over one finger, and then it cuts through just the peel. And they claim that then you can use the end of it to peel away. You cut it into sections, and then you can peel away one section at a time. I haven't tried it yet, but this seemed like kind of a cool thing. This is a vegetable scrubber. Again, it's got a finger ring on one side, so you don't have to grip it. You just slip it over a finger, and then you can scrub away at your veggies. I thought that was kind of cool. But the two I went to find are first this device. Has anyone seen this yet? Okay, this is a new find of mine. I'm very excited. It's made, no surprise, by OXO. It's called the OXO POP, P-O-P. These are modular. They come this size, but different heights. They come half as wide, they come twice as wide, and then they stack in increments. But the best part about this is the way you open it. And then seal it. It's very cool. OXO does nice stuff. They get it. So that's the newest thing in their line. And this is, if anybody went to the technology transfer session this morning, the competitive jar opener. This is the 1995 one-finger jar opener. And I do need that Swiss Army knife to get into this thing, but I got to show you how it is. I had to go to the kitchen here to get a jar, but I wanted to demonstrate how this works. Can somebody help me open the package? When you go to this restaurant, you get Grey Poupon. Here's my deal. From 5 to 6 tonight, there's going to be a SIG open house on the exhibit floor. I'm going to get some batteries, and I'm going to be showing this off at the booth, at the table, at the SIG open house. and you can come and play with it and all the gadgets. You can pick up my gadgets tonight. You can pick up Jim's tomorrow. Yes? I think it's 2 AA's. Hey! The other pitch I want to make is that somehow SIG 17 got 2 SIG meetings tomorrow morning, and we didn't get any. So the SIG 19 meeting, if you want to come to the SIG 19 meeting, is at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, I'm sorry to say, in room Prince William. SIG 17 has their own room, and I don't remember what it is, but SIG 19 will be in Prince William.
Okay, we are going to draw 8 names for 8 prizes. The first 4, yeah, maybe you should see a demonstration before you make your decision.
It's a plastic jar, it's not so active.
All right, then. Now, that deserves a round of applause, don't you think? And the tablecloth is still standing. No. Okay, we're going to draw 8 names. We have 4 gifts here, so the first 4 names will pick their gift from here, and the other 4 will pick up theirs at the...
No, they'd rather have one of those. They can say, I want one of those. They can pass on these.
You know, you always change the rules. Have you ever noticed?
They should have a choice of all 8.
Okay.
Shouldn't they?
I'm going to give you the bag.
No, I'm shut up.
Okay. I'm going to draw 8 names. You can when your name comes up, you can either, as Molly has instructed, you can either come up and choose one of these, or you can take what's behind the curtain at the RARC booth in room 15. Booth 55 tomorrow afternoon. Okay. And our impartial judge here is a volunteer. Your name is?
Solana.
She's been hiding in the back, not looking at these names throughout the entire thing this afternoon, so she's going to be impartial. Our first winner is Dan Digman. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Close
enough to win? Okay. Now you have... The credit card thing?
The L card.
Okay, we'll put... Please write that on there.
L card.
We'll hold that for you. Sorry, we're supposed to be doing this. Aaron Rapaki?
Yeah.
Is that pronounced correctly?
Yeah. Okay. it's Rapaki, so...
Aaron Rapaki, what's your choice?
The jar opener,
okay.
She gets the jar also.
The jar too.
Does she get the batteries?
Oh,
you'll have to negotiate that.
Catherine Powell. No, I'm just kidding. Raj? Must know that this is you. Okay. Raj Pagadala?
Yeah.
Is that close enough to win?
Okay, I want the
e-grips. You want the e-grips? Okay. Write the e-grips on there. Leonard Reinsfelder.
Pick your container.
The container.
Yep. I'll deliver it.
This one? There's nothing inside it, you know.
You can put your snack in it.
You can put your snack in it. You can put your ferret in it. Okay. Alexandra Jeffords?
Yeah.
Alexandra Jeffords.
I'll pick the ice slice.
Ice slice, okay. Excellent choice. The sassy bowl.
Sassy.
Okay. You have to pronounce it correctly, or you can't win. Mike Cefalli? Cefalli?
Yes.
Mike?
What's left?
What's left?
The one in your
fruits
right.
Or veggies? Veggies.
Okay, you're taking the prize that we got here, huh? Okay.
The others are all gone.
Okay, we have one more winner,
this
right?
This is the last one.
This is the last winner. Alan Cantor.
Hey!
Is that everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been great sports. I know we have some evaluation forms that a lot of like for everybody.
Yeah.
Right, what?
Okay, I'm going to announce the CEU number now, the CEU code. It's 426. 426. And please hand your evaluation form to one of the volunteers on your way out, please.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.